welcome back to Out the Gate. In this episode, I want to do a little addendum to the last episode in which I talked to Katie Burgess about solar power, which has become very commonplace on cruising boats, but that wasn't always the case. And as I mentioned in the last episode, my father happened to sail on the very first cruising boat ever to have a solar panel on it. So my dad is in town, and I thought I would ask him to share the story a bit. Thanks for being on the show, Dad.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Ben.
So let's back up a little bit. And first, tell us about the boat that you were on, where you were sailing, and who you were sailing with.
Well, let's hearken back to 1962 when I was living in Washington, D.C., and was a young naval officer working in the nuclear reactors program in its early days. And my brother had had a graduate school at Stanford in electrical engineering, had a roommate from India. And a cousin of his was a professor of radio astronomy at Caltech. And he sought me out because he understood that I had done a little sailing. And he had a lifelong dream of sailing around the world. He had never done much sailing, and he thought that I had sailing experience, having sailed in a few 14, 16-foot dinghies in lakes and rivers. So he was temporarily assigned to Bell Labs in New Jersey and was in Washington for a conference and sought me out. And we had long discussions about what would be the perfect boat, perfect size boat to go sail around the world.
And so he had already hatched this idea that he wanted to go off sailing?
He had harbored the idea for a long time, but he'd really done nothing towards implementing it.
This idea hadn't really ever crossed your mind?
Not at all. But it sounded interesting at any rate. So we stayed in contact. We had discussions, I say, about the perfect boat and what tools would you take if you were sailing around the world and things like that.
Was he persuasive, or what about him and his ideas got you interested in the idea of sailing across an ocean?
Well, it was something that gelled over time. This was when I was still in the Navy. I left the Navy in 1962 in the summer and had a fellowship to get a graduate degree at Stanford. So I moved out to Palo Alto. He was down in the Los Angeles area at Caltech. And so we stayed in touch and we talked more. And he became enamored of trimarans, which were quite the rage back then in the early 60s. And there were two preeminent designers of trimarans. One was Dick Newick down in St. Croix, and the other was Arthur Piver in San Francisco or Sausalito. There were an awful lot of the trimarans that were Piver's particular. They were homemade out of plywood, but there was a company in England that was building them for about $10,000. And so he was pretty keen on going ahead and purchasing one of these. So we arranged to go out for a day sailing with Arthur Piver. He had just finished building a try that I think he was planning to sail across the Pacific or something. And as it turned out, Piver shortly thereafter was lost at sea, I think on the very boat that we were sailing on.
Despite that, you decided this was the kind of boat.
Well, despite that, Rad went ahead and purchased the boat. And having done that, he asked me and he asked two of his radio astronomy colleagues, one Englishman and another American at Caltech, if they were interested in sailing to Australia.
What went through your mind when he asked you if you would do that?
Well, I was kind of bored. I had gotten my master's degree after a year at Stanford, and for a lack of anything better to do, had continued my graduate work, but I really had no burning desire to get a PhD, so sailing to Australia sounded like a great alternative.
Jump ahead. You ended up joining the boat not in England, where the boat was built, but where?
I joined him in Antigua. I was supposed to join them. The original plan was to be there in July, but as it turned out...
Be in Antigua in July.
Be in the Caribbean somewhere in July. Mm-hmm. And as it turned out, they were delayed, which is not surprising since none of them were sailors and it was a brand new boat and everything else.
The Caribbean in July is not exactly where you want
to be. No, that wasn't good planning either. So they ended up making the traditional crossing in January, and I joined them in February in Antigua. That was 1965.
And that wasn't the time when you saw many solar panels.
You didn't see any solar panels. he had been seconded from Caltech to Bell Labs because before there were lasers, there were what was called masers. There were magnetic amplifiers. And he saw these as a great opportunity to have a low noise amplifier for the radio telescopes. So he spent a number of months at Bell Labs. And while he was at Bell Labs was building the first communication satellites, Telstar 1 and Telstar 2. And these were solar powered. So they were making solar panels for the satellites. The rejected solar cells that were rejected for the Telstar panels, they took a number of them and put them into a small panel. It was maybe a foot by 10 inches or something.
You say they?
Bell Labs.
Bell Labs.
His friends at Bell Labs took the rejected solar panels, which would have gone in the trash heap, and made a little panel that they thought was waterproof and sent it down to us in Puerto Rico.
So you open this package in Puerto Rico.
Well, it was fascinating because, again, the largest radio telescope in the world is in Arecibo on the west end of Puerto Rico. And so Rad and Dave, the other two radio astronomers with whom I was sailing, had all sorts of friends. And we had the workshop there and everything else. So we were there for several weeks making improvements on the boat and things using their equipment. And this panel arrived and we made a little mount for it and put it on a stanchion and pointed at the sun, took our Philips reel-to-reel tape recorder and plugged it in. Lo and behold, the thing played. It was magical.
That is amazing. It didn't put out very much.
Oh, it probably put out an amp or less.
Yeah.
But the boat we were sailing on, it was 35 feet, but it was bare bones. We had, the only engine was a 15-horse outboard, and we had about 10 gallons of gas. So that obviously was only for getting in and out of harbor. The only instrument we had was a sumlog, which is a VDO German sumlog, which is essentially a Volkswagen's mechanical speedometer. And in mid-Pacific,
And you would drag a little prop.
No, it was fixed mounted on the hull.
Oh, okay.
A little nylon propeller that would spin a speedometer cable that turned, and it gave you speed, and it had an odometer on it that would give you distance. So we used that for dead reckoning, the distance we sailed. But in mid-Pacific, the nylon propeller came off or was eaten off by a fish, I don't know. So we took the lid of a tuna fish can and bent it appropriately and replaced it, and that worked the rest of the way to Australia. We did have a radio transmitter, but we had a 6-volt automotive battery and no way to charge it. The radio transmitter was of no use, so that got thrown over just to save weight. And whenever we'd get to a port, we'd go to a gas station with our battery and they would charge it up. And we had lights, but we didn't use them other than to turn them on briefly to find something and turn them off. But we did have a little grain of wheat compass light in our surplus World War II aircraft compass, which is what we used to steer by. So the little light bulb was the only electricity we regularly consumed.
Did you ever connect the little panel to the 6-volt battery?
Yeah, after we had it installed, we did. Yeah. So we maintained a little bit of a charge that way.
And you were doing celestial.
We were doing celestial. Rad and Dave, being radio astronomers, figured they really didn't need a sextant or celestial navigation with two pieces of string and a globe. They could figure out where they were. But fortunately, they bought a World War II surplus bubble sextant. We didn't use the bubble. You could view the horizon through it.
A little more accurate than a piece of string.
It worked fine all the way across the Pacific.
And how long did it take you across the Pacific?
Well, I joined them in February. We left, I guess it was late June, early July, we left Arecibo finally. Went through the canal in July, left the Galapagos. We spent about 3 weeks in the Galapagos. Left there in early August. We ended up arriving in Sydney on Christmas Eve of 1965.
Was there much interest in the solar panel from other cruisers?
It was so small that nobody really noticed it. It was a rarity, but it didn't create a stir. Nobody realized the potential.
And do you remember when you first installed solar power on subsequent boats that you had?
I guess when Mom and I went cruising in 1995 or something, we probably put a solar panel on Dufka, And it's the same solar panel I have now. It's 85 watts, I think, but it certainly keeps the batteries topped off.
Well, it's amazing to see where solar has come since that initial panel.
Yeah, boats have gone around the world on solar power now.
Yeah, that Planet Solar, a Swiss boat that circumnavigated
that was several years ago,
too. Yeah, yeah. I know you have many more stories from that trip across the Pacific and other sailing journeys you've gone, but I just wanted to quickly close the loop on this solar story and the first solar panel ever. So thank you so much for
my pleasure. About. You're doing a great job with these.
Thanks. Thanks for listening. I'm Ben Shaw, host, editor, and producer of the Out the Gate podcast.